This is the last in our series regarding the Shalshalas HaKabbalah. I think it's actually the last year for the entire summer series that was organized by these different institutions. So I hope this is a good send-off for the end of this series for the summer. Up until this point, for the last three times we have met, we have discussed the giving of the Torah and the Shalshalas HaKabbalah, the chain of transmission. What we got at Har Sinai, how Torah Shebaal Peh has stayed the same, how it's transformed over time, until arriving in this period where we are right now, at the division point between Rishonim and Achronim, and then Emir Tzashem, we'll be able to continue until this very day and to trace everything in the chain of transmission. There is an understanding that the Shulchan Aruch, which we'll discuss in a moment, is the dividing line between the Rishonim and the Achronim. This is generally what I teach my students, if they need to know, is this a Rishon, is this an Achron? Because the Shulchan Aruch transformed the way we approach Halacha, the way we use Halacha, and was really a seminal work in the history of the Jewish people, on par with the Mishnah and the Gemara, and the works of the Rambam. The Shulchan Aruch was extremely, extremely important. And as we traced last time from the period of the Rishonim to the Shulchan Aruch, we ended with Rav Moshe Isserles, the Rav of Krakow, who lived from 1530 to 1572, and in his lifetime, Rav Yosef Karo, who is the Rav, who was a rabbi in Sfas, first in Turkey and first in Spain, as we'll discuss in a moment, who lived from 1488 to 1575. The author of the Beis Yosef and the Shulchan Aruch. What is the story behind the Shulchan Aruch and what went into it? Yosef Karo, who was four when his family was kicked out of Spain because of the expulsion, began work on his work, the Beis Yosef, the House of Joseph, in 1522. He noted in his introduction that because of the Gullus and along with Yerides Hadoros, the descending of quality of the generations, it had led to a decline in scholarship and learning. And there was a great need for a comprehensive and authoritative guide that would take care of many texts that had appeared since the Rambam and the Balei HaTosos. And there was a need of uniformity where there was much confusion in the world of Halacha. The practical works of Halacha that were available through his time were too thin and didn't explain anything. And such short guides don't give the correct halacha l'maisa, the practical halacha, and it doesn't guide the person increasing their own limud haTorah. So, Rav Yosef Karo wrote a work that summarized all of the major discussions in halacha based on the order of the practical work of the tour of Rav Yaakov ben Harash, who we discussed last time. Now, in order to appreciate the Beis Yosef and the Shulchan Aruch, you need to understand the tour. The tour is divided into four sections, arba turim, four pillars of practical halacha. The tour doesn't discuss laws of kadshim, korbanos, taros, or any halachos that are not relevant until the days of Mashiach. He divided it into four sections, orachayim, the laws that occur in the course of everyday life, waking up in the morning, davening, brachos, moadim, and Shabbos. The second is choshen mishpat, business law, economic law, damages, and torts. The third is Evan HaEzer, the laws of marriage and divorce. And finally, Yoredeya is more of a potpourri, so to speak, of everything else that doesn't fit into a box. Kashrus, Avodah Zarah, Tzedakah, Taras Mishpacha, Kibud Av V'Em, learning, writing Torah, Avelus, anything that doesn't fit into the other three categories. And the Beis Yosef would explain the halacha in the tour, note the source, discuss whether there was a machlokas regarding what the tour said, and then explain other understandings that the tour didn't bring. He would also explain the views of the Rishonim, including the Rambam. And after quoting all of the sources, he would give his opinion, halacha lemaisa. So there should be one mainstream halacha. How did he decide how to paskin? So he followed this now famous approach. I'll read to you from the Beis Yosef's introduction. He says, "V'lachein hiskamti b'da'ati kilios shloshes amudei harab." Rav Yosef Karo felt that there were three pillars of halacha, asher habayis beis Yisrael nishan alem, that leaned on these pillars, and those were the Rif, the Rush, and the Rambam. The Rif and the Rambam coming from Sephardic countries, the Rush balancing Sephardic and Ashkenazi countries. So he said, "Amarti ali bishem b'makom sheshnayim mehem maskimim. If two out of three agree to one thing, then I will follow them." Versus the one isolated opinion. Now, there's much to discuss about that approach, or how did he come to that approach, why was that effective, did he always follow that approach, but again, we're trying to cover a lot of Jewish history in one evening, so we're going to move forward. A few years later, he took his work and condensed it into just the final psak, so that people could review it easily and use it as an easy guide to know practical halacha. Technically, you're supposed to learn the Shulchan Aruch every 30 days. He called the work Shulchan Aruch, a set table, before the Jewish people, where they could easily come and access halacha. When the Beis Yosef came off the printing press and arrived in Krakow, Poland, it landed at the desk of its revered, very young chief rabbi, Rav Moshe Isserles. He too wanted to create an expansive book of halacha, which would guide scholars and laymen in relevant areas of halacha, and the Rama labored for years as he put his soul and his being into what would hoped would be his Darkei Moshe, the path of Moshe. He had a different approach to psak. He followed not the idea of the majority, 2 out of 3, but he followed the principle of Basrai, following the latest and most prominent opinions and minhag of what was the most current practice. But when the Beis Yosef landed in Krakow, the Rama was devastated. How could this have happened? Everything he worked on had been for naught. Someone beat him to the ultimate goal, and there was nowhere else to turn. But he noticed when examining the Beis Yosef that Rav Yosef Karo focused mainly on Sephardic tradition and not the Ashkenazi tradition. Now, one of the reasons the Darkei Moshe was written is because the Rama needed to consolidate and bring together all of the classic German, and again, as we noted last time, at this point, Minog, at the center of Torah, has moved from Germany to Poland by the 1500s. He needed to bring all these opinions in one place. And he saw that Rav Yosef Karo did not do this. So he said that maybe we can either fight against this and publish an Ashkenazi response, or many people at this juncture might have done that. A competitor comes out with a product that's similar but different. Let me try to beat him with my product. Someone's going to attain kavod instead of me, but maybe there's another way for me to challenge that kavod and draw a limelight towards me. Could you imagine stifling your life's work because somebody else beat you to it? But the Rama knew that if he were to publish his work, it would only increase the differences between Jews in different parts of the world. Instead of making a separate work, he decided to make a compendium to the Shulchan Aruch and the Beis Yosef that would add the view of Ashkenazim. And he created what he called a mapa, a tablecloth for the Sephardic table, so that Ashkenazim and Sephardim could sit at the same table together. So Jews from all over the world could be at the same team instead of knocking each other over with their own traditions and views. It may have been the single greatest act of courage in the history of Torah, perhaps next to Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi writing down the Mishnah. If it was not for the Rama, then Jews would be even more separate than we already are. When we walk into any Beis Medrash and we see Sephardim and Ashkenazim learning from the same Beis Yosef and Shulchan Aruch, their conclusions may be different, but we still learn from the same Sefer. And this comes from the idea that sometimes it is greater to suppress creativity than to express creativity. And on the shelves of Jewish homes sits the Shulchan Aruch of the Mechaber and the Rama, because of the shalom that they created. If the Rama would have chosen to fight instead of joining with the Beis Yosef, the Shulchan Aruch would never have made it. Often there are times when putting aside our kavod requires the foresight to see that what will be in the future, the ability to understand that, more benefit can come from working together than from working apart, even at the expense of one's own honor. Now, why is the Shulchan Aruch the final psak halacha? Why is it that if we say shteit in Shulchan Aruch, that generally, mostly ends the discussion? Because all Jewish communities and the Rabbanim in the generation of Rav Yosef Karo and Rav Moshe Isserles and the following generation accepted the work emsak. Kiblu Alayhu, they write. They accepted the work. And once the Jewish communities accepted the work of the Shulchan Aruch, it became the final halacha. These were the two greatest Rabbanim of the 1500s, and they worked together to create a practical guide for the Jewish people. Just to give you some examples. The Taz writes in Yeridaya, V'korani bazeh Shulchan Aruch, Sod Hashem l'Reyav, that the Shulchan Aruch was written with Sod Hashem. It was written on a level of Ruach HaKodesh. Rav Yonasan Eibishitz writes in the Urim V'Tumim, Mi Gadol Mi Rabbeinu Ma Rav Yosef Cairo, Asher Mamish Mayom Ramba, Rav Yosef Lo Kam Ke Yosef Azar. There was never a Yosef like Rav Yosef Cairo. Uladati Ein Safek, Yakol Bichsav Miyad Hashem, Hiska Yadam Yizrin Baruch HaKodesh. Ritzanach HaKohen writes a similar idea in Machshav Ascharetz and Chela Gimel, again, that there was this feeling that there was something otherworldly about the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah's work, and it was simply accepted in all communities. And once it became this accepted text of Psak Halacha, it became the final word in almost every single case. Now, there is needed some explanation. I just want to make a comment about how somebody becomes an authority, right? Sometimes we'll ask the question, well, how do you become the Gadol Hador? How do you become a posek? The way a book or a rabbi becomes known as an authority is simply through peer review. When a rabbi issues a ruling or writes a sefer, it goes out into the world and other rabbis read it and review the content. If they feel the ideas are good and correct, they'll accept it. And if the other rabbanim feel the content and the ideas are not good, then the rabbanim will let people know that what the person wrote is ridiculous and they're not qualified. The same thing goes on in scientific research, right? How do I know if a person is writing something that is worthy of a Nobel Prize or worthy of, you know, being sent into the trash? Because it's peer-reviewed. Other scientists and other doctors review the medical research, see if it can be replicated, see if it stands up to the scientific method. The same thing works in the realm of halacha. This is akin to where Moshe Feinstein writes in his introduction to Digros Moshe. Now, I didn't say, like, I'm going to be a posek. What happened was people wrote questions, I answered them, other rabbis liked them, and therefore the snowball kept on rolling. It's not that one person is simply appointed with a magic wand, but rather it comes from a peer-reviewed system in which people recognize the scholarship, the brilliance, the sensitivity of particular rabbis over others. Let's move in now to the period of the Achronim. Rav Yehoshua Valk HaKohen, the author of the Smud, the Me'iros Einayim on the Shulchan Aruch, was the Talmud of the Rambah. His student was Rav Naftali Hirsch, who was the sofer of the Jewish community of Prague, and a student of the Sma. His student was Rav Moshe Ravkis, the author of the Be'er HaGola on the Shulchan Aruch. The Be'er HaGola is the work of the Shulchan Aruch that tells you the source of the Shulchan Aruch's opinion. He died either in 1671, 1684, it's not clear, and he learned from his father, Rav Naftali Hirsch, who was the Talmud of the Sma. Rav Shlomo Zalman was the father of the Vilna Gaon, and he died in 1758, and he knew and he learned from his grandfather, he was a Talmud of his grandfather, the Be'er HaGola. Now, Rav Shlomo Zalman had a son whose name was Rav Eliyahu, and we could spend weeks on his son and the impact of his son, but he's better known as the Vilna Gaon, HaGaon Rabbeinu Eliyahu, who died in 1797. And the Hakdamah to the Be'er HaGra says that the Gra learned most of his Torah from his father before beginning his own Mahalach and learning. And that will pause for a moment, because really, we've gone five generations. The primary Talmud of the Vilna Gaon is Rav Chaim of Elazhin. But I just want to also bring in another chain to connect him to somebody else. The Rebbe of Rav Chaim of Elazhin, before he went to the Vilna Gaon, was Rav Aryeh Leib Ginsberg, better known as the Shagas Aryeh. And he was a student of his father, Rav Usher Ginsberg, the Av Basin of Minsk, who died in 1751, who was a Talmud of his father, Rav Leib Bala Tosafos of Minsk as well. So that's also a different line, a different chain that connects Rav Chaim of Elazhin to the Masorah. So let's discuss Rav Chaim of Elazhin. 1749, 1821, learnt first from the Shagas Aryeh, then from the Vilna Gaon, founder of the modern yeshiva as we know it. And there's what to discuss about how he impacted and changed the world of yeshivas as we understand them. I recommend looking in Avi HaYeshivos of Rav Dov Eliach, the great biographer of Rav Chaim of Elazhin. I think Art Scroll has translated into English as the father of the yeshiva, some of the chapters. One can go look over there. Every branch of Yeshivos Lita, every branch of the Lithuanian yeshivas extend from the Volozhin yeshiva. Also, if we want to label Talmidim of the Gra who had an impact as well, We need to also mention Rav Avram Danzig, who died in 1821, the author of the Chai Adam and the Chachmas Adam, which became the standard work of practical halacha in Jewish homes until the Mishnah Berurah. So that is also from the line of the Vilna Gaon. Now I want to step away from our chain for a moment and talk about other chains for a moment. Again, we want to focus on one chain that's going to get us down to nowadays and this present date on August 13th, 2020. But I want to step away and look at other chains for a moment. I want to talk about two chains, and that is the Mesorah of the Hungarian Rabbanim. The Pnei Yehoshua and Rav David Schiff lived in the 1600s. Rav Nassen Adler was a Talmud of the Pnei Yehoshua and Rav David Schiff. Now, Rav Nassen Adler had two prominent Talmudim. The first was Rav Avraham Bing, who would become the Rebbe of Rav Yaakov Ettlinger, who would begin the Mesorah of the modern German Rabbanim. So that is one Mesorah that comes from the Pnei Yehoshua in the 1600s, the German Rabbanim coming from Rav Yaakov Ettlinger. The other chain is the major Talmud of Rav Nassen Adler and Rav Pinchas Halevi Horowitz, is the Chsam Sofer of Moshe Sofer, who would begin the major Mesorah for Hungarian Rabbanim, and that follows that line again, stemming from the Pnei Yehoshua. If I want to talk about the line of Galitzia and Hasidim, so that's a bit more complicated, because that means we'd have to get into the Baal Shem Tov, and it's really hard to pin down what is exactly the Shalshalas HaKabbalah. We don't know who the Rebbe of the Baal Shem Tov was, and that's a whole sticky, complicated situation on its own. But when it comes to Halacha and Psak within the realm of Hasidus and Galitzia, we look at two major figures, and that is the Baal HaTanya, or Shir Zalman of Liadi, who learned from the Maggid of Mezrich, the Talmud of the Baal Shem Tov, and the other is the Divrei Chaim, the Sanzer Rav. Many, many, many of the great, great Galitzian or Poskim and Hasidish Poskim come from the line of the Divrei Chaim and the Sanzer Rav. Now, let's move back now to the yeshivas of Lita. All the major yeshivas of Lita extend from Volozhin, Mir, Slobodka, Novardik, Telz. All of them in some form will come back to Volozhin. But let's stick to our chain. The major Talmud of the Chaim Volozhin was his son, Rav Yitzchak of Volozhin, who died in 1849. Now, since we're in the 1840s, in the 1850s, and 1860s, let's take a step off of the train for a moment to discuss Rav Shlomo Gansfried, who comes from that Hungarian line, and also a mixture of the Galiciano line as well, of that Polish section of the Divrei Chaim. In 1864, Rav Shlomo Gansfried, a rabbi in Hungary, printed the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. Printed Sfarim were expensive before the advent of electric printing press, and at that time a full set of Shulchan Aruch was rare in most communities. There was probably only one set in the shul or the house of the rabbi. Therefore, it was difficult to look up halachos. In addition, to get halacha l'maisa, you had to look in the Shulchan Aruch, and the Magen Avraham, and the Taz, and the Machzor Shekel, and the Prima Gadim. There was the shorter version in the Chai Adam, but the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch was much, much shorter. And within a short amount of time, the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch became the standard work for laymen to learn and look up halacha. And to this day, they still teach from the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch in shuls. The Kitzur Shulchan Aruch is one of the most reprinted Sfarim in the history of the Jewish people. So that also is occurring at this time. The Talmud of Rav Yitzchak of Volozhin was Rav Yosef Dov HaLevi Soloveitchik, better known as the Beis HaLevi. And the Talmud of the Beis HaLevi was his son, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, who died in 1918. Rav Chaim Soloveitchik sends an upheaval in the Derech HaLimud, in the way the yeshivas would learn in their approach to learning Gemara. At this time, two rabbis, one a Rosh Yeshiva, the other rabbi of a large city, saw that there was a lot of literature and opinion since the times of the Shulchan Aruch. So they each wrote different works trying to summarize and clarify new discussions of halacha since the time of Yosef Karo. Their works became accepted amongst Ashkenazim as almost final works in halacha. The first is Rav Yisrael Meir HaKohen, died in 1933, Rosh Yeshiva of Radin, as we know, the Chafetz Chaim. He was a Talmud of Rav Menachem Nochem Kaplan of Haradna, known as Rav Nechumka of Haradna, who was a Talmud in the yeshivas of Volozhin and Mir, again, going back to that line of Volozhin and the Vilna Gaon. He authored the Mishnah Berurah. On the page of the Mishnah Berurah, we have the Shulchan Aruch, the Ramah, the Ber Hagola, the Mishnah Berurah himself, the Ber Halacha, and that's a whole discussion about the structure, the writing, and how the Mishnah Berurah came together. The other major Rav and work at that time was Rabbi Chil Michal Epstein, the Rav of Navardik, who died in 1908, the student of Rav Eliyahu Goldberg, who was the rabbi of Bavroisk, who was the Talmud of Rav Chaim of Volozhin. Again, all coming back to Volozhin and the Vilna Gaon. To see more about the Aruch HaShulchan, I would highly recommend the work of Rabbi Eitam Henkin, Hashem Yikam Damo, which was published anonymously after he was murdered by terrorists. Now, there's a lot to discuss about the relationship between the Aruch HaShulchan and the Mishneh Berurah. How come one became more popular over the other? The Rav of a Rosh Yeshiva, like the Chafetz Chaim giving Psak, the role of a Rav of a community, like the Aruch HaShulchan giving Psak, and how those things fit together. Now, at this time, we could also move over to the Sephardic world and talk about the line of Rav Avadya Yosef and his Rebbeim, Rav Ezra Atiya and his Rebbe Rav Avram Chaim Adas, and his Rebbe Rav Mordechai Abadi, and we could look at the line of Baghdad and the Ben Ish Chai and Rav Mordechai Eliyahu and the differences of approach between those two schools. But again, we can look up their biographies and share them for another time. The Talmud of Rav Chaim Soloveitchik were many. We could talk about the Birch HaShmuel, Rav Baruch Bar Leibowitz, and we could talk about his two major sons. He had three sons, but the two sons we're going to focus on is Rav Moshe Soloveitchik and Rav Yitzhak Zev Soloveitchik. The Brisker Rav Yitzhak Zev will split the dynasty in half. When the Holocaust comes, he will go to Eretz Yisrael and begin the branch of Brisk in Eretz Yisrael. And Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, before the Holocaust, will come to America and become Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshiva Sereni Yitzhak Elchanan, better known as YU. He dies in 1941. His Talmud was Rav Yosef Dov HaLevi Soloveitchik, better known as the Rav, who died in 1993. And his Talmidim are many, as we know, but for this particular discussion is Rabbi Schechter and Rabbi Meir Tversky, who I had the pleasure of learning in their shirim for a number of years. So again, what we've connected to is me sitting right here talking to everybody right now over Zoom, all the way back to the Vilna Gaon, which is very empowering if you think about it. We've only connected in about seven stages, me and everybody here, to the Vilna Gaon, which is quite interesting. And then all the way back to Moshe Rabbeinu, which we'll review in a moment. Now, I just want to make a few comments before we review everything we did for the last 4 weeks. When we learn Torah, and specifically Halacha, we are part of a perfect chain going back to Moshe Rabbeinu. And that is what I want people to focus on. When you sit down and you go to a shir and you learn from a person who's teaching Torah, you are part of a Shalshal Samasora that is unbroken to the days of Moshe Rabbeinu. We are taking a precious treasure, using it to enhance our lives and to connect to Hashem, and then we are safeguarding that Masora for the next generation. And that is the key. When we talk about the Shalshal HaKabbalah and we speak about Masora, it doesn't just mean, and not downplaying, it doesn't just mean what your Bubby did. That's important. But what I really mean is the continuation of Torah Shebaal Peh and the transmission to Moshe Rabbeinu. And it is probably, but next to Yiras Hashem and Avas Hashem, the next best thing that we are transmitting down to our children and their children is Torah Shebaal Peh and this beautiful treasure that's coming from Moshe Rabbeinu. Now, as we said, this is only one line of the Masorah. There are different lines that extend back to Moshe Rabbeinu, as we've tried to highlight. Chassidim, Sfardim, other communities, Germany, Hungary, as we tried to touch upon as well. I want to make one other comment about what it means to be a member of the Balei HaMasorah, the people who are transmitting the Masorah. You know, it says in Parshas Yisro that Yisro found that Moshe was exhausted and needed to, you know, spread out some of the ability and the teaching to other people. We see from the advice of Yisro to Moshe that there are levels of Rabbanim. There are more rabbis that deal with the more basic day-to-day issues, and gradually less and less Rabbanim who answer more complicated and more specified issues. Your local Orthodox rabbi may be equipped to answer Hilchos Brachos, Hilchos Shabbos issues, officiate at a wedding, but there are more complicated areas of Halacha that require broader shoulders, like new technology, its application in Halacha, potential issues of abortion, complicated issues coming up with regarding to marriage and divorce. And above those rabbis, there are Gedolei HaPoskim, who write and decide on the most pressing issues of our time. Your local shul rabbi has the right to give a psak, perhaps in certain areas, but there may be things that are above and beyond his ability, and above and beyond even other Rabbanim as well. And it's important to know, at the end of the day, as Rosh Hashanah likes to point out, that not all Rabbanim are created equal. A person needs to know, and a rabbi needs to know, when is he deciding something that is something that is on his level, what's something that's outside of his level, something that's above and beyond, that should go to somebody who has much broader shoulders and much more knowledge. And when we talk about Chachmei HaMesora, now, is every single person on that list that we learned before through the last 4 weeks considered to be the Gadol HaDor in the generation? No. That's more of a list in order to connect that chain of transmission. But when we talk about Chachmei HaMesora, we're talking about people who deal with the greatest questions of the generation, who carry the Torah Sheba'al Peh and guard it with their life, their neshama, their blood, sweat, and tears to bring it to the next generation, and have total mastery of that Torah with Yirat Shamayim, Avas Hashem, Avas Yisrael. And these are things we need to keep in mind when it comes to deciding, you know, who is going to be put on that pedestal of Chachmei HaMesora. What I'd like to do, just for a moment, is to review everything we just did, and I'd like to show you how it all fits together at the end of the day, very quickly. One moment. Let me just share my screen. Okay, good. This is from the beginning again. And let's show how everything connected over the last 4 weeks. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave the Torah to Moshe, who taught it to Yehoshua, who taught it to Pinchas, who taught it to Asna ben Knaz, who taught it to Ehud ben Geru, who taught it to Devorah, who taught it to Gidon ben Yoash, who taught it to Tola ben Pua, who taught it to Yair HaGilali, who taught it to Yiftach HaGiladi, whose Talmud was Ibtsan Raboaz, whose Talmud was Elon HaZvuluni, whose Talmud was Ibdon ben Halal, whose Talmud was Shimshon ben Menach, whose Talmud was Eliyah Cohen, whose Talmud was Shmuel HaNavi, who taught the Torah to David HaMelech, who taught the Torah to Achiah HaShiloni and Shlomo HaMelech, who taught the Torah to Eliyahu HaNavi, who taught the Torah to Elisha HaNavi, who then taught it to his student, Yehoyada HaKohen, who taught it to his Talmud, Zechariah HaKohen, who taught it to his student, Hoshea HaNavi, who taught it to his student, Amos HaNavi, who taught it to Yeshaya HaNavi, who taught it to Micha HaNavi, who taught it to Yoel, who taught it to Nachum, who taught it to Habakkuk, who taught the Torah to Tzefanya, who was the Rebbe of Yirmiyahu, who was the Rebbe of Baruch ben Neriah, who was the Rebbe of Ezra HaSofer, who was the Rebbe of Shimon HaTzadik, who was the Rebbe of Antigonus Yisocho, who was the Rebbe of Yossi ben Yoezer and Yossi ben Yochan, who were the teachers of Yoshua ben Paracha and Itai HaRabeli, who were the teachers of Yehuda ben Tabai and Shimon ben Shetach, who were the teachers of Shammai and Avtalion, who were the teachers of Shammai and Hillel, were now about the year 10 of Common Era, who were the teachers of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, who taught Yehoshua ben Chananya and Rabbi Yezer ben Horkanus, who taught Rabbi Akiva, who taught his major Talmidim after the passing of his students, who taught Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, who taught Rav and Shmuel, oops, sorry. One second. I lost it for a moment. Who taught Rav and Shmuel, who taught Rabbi Yehuda and Rav Huna, who taught Rav Chista and Rabbi Bar Nachmani and Rav Yosef, who taught Abaye and Rava, who taught Ravina and Ravashi, who were the Rebbeim of Mar Bar Ravashi, who taught Rabbi Tosfa, who taught Rabbi Yosef, who taught Rabbi Simona, who taught Rabbi Ravai in the period of the Savorayim, who then taught the period of the Gaonim, Rav Hanan Mishka, who taught Rav Chana, who taught Rav Dostanai, who taught Rav Chi, who taught Mar Rav Yeh, who taught Rav Nachonai Gon, who taught Rav Yehuda Gon, who taught Rav Paltui Gon and Rav Amram Gon, who taught Rav Tzemach Gon, who taught Rav Yehuda Gon, who taught Rav Chanina and Rav Sadja Gon, who taught Rav Sharira Gon and taught Rabbeinu Chushael Gon, who taught Rav Hai ben Rav Shira Gon and Rabbeinu Gershom Mor HaGola, who received traditions from the Gaonim, who is a Rebbe of Rav Yaakov ben Yakar, who is the Rebbe of Rashi, who is the Rebbe of Rav Meir ben Shmuel, who is the Rebbe of Rabbeinu Tam, who is the Rebbe of Elazar of Mitz, and the Ri HaZaken, who are the Rebbeim of Yehuda Sirlion, who is the Rebbe of Rav Yechiel of Paris, who is the Rebbe of Yitzhak of Vienna, who is the Rebbe of the Maharam Rothenburg, who is the Rebbe of Rav Yoel of Oppenheim, who is the Rebbe of Rav Yaakov, or Rav Ozer of Shalzei, who is the Rebbe of Yisrael of Karmai, Zalgos Ashiri, and the Rebbe of Rav Shalom ben Yitzchak of Neustadt, who were the Rebbeim of the Maharil Rav Yaakov Malin, who was the Rebbe of the Trumas Hadeshen and the Ma'ari Vile, who was the Rebbeim of Rav Yosef ben Moshe, the Leket Yosha, and Rav Yisrael Baruna, and Rav David Taveli Sprintz, who were the Rebbeim of Rav Yaakov Margolios of Nuremberg, who was the Rebbe of Rav Yaakov Palak, who moved Torah from Germany to Poland, who was the Rebbe of Rav Shalom Shachn of Lublin, who was the Rebbe of the Rama, who was the Rebbe of the Sma, who was the Rebbe of Naftali Hirsch, who was the Rebbe of Rav Moshe Rivkus, who was the Rebbe of Rav Shlomo Zalman, who was the father and Rebbe of the Vilna Gaon, who was the Rebbe of Rav Chaim Voloshin and Rav Ram Danzig, who was the Rebbe of Rav Yitzchak Voloshin, who was the Rebbe of the Beis Halevi, who was the Rebbe of his son Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, who was the Rebbe of Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, who was the Rebbe of the Rav of Yosef W. Soloveitchik, who taught Rabbi Herschel Shechter and Meir Tversky, and then in turn taught me. Not that I'm on the level to be in the Shalshal Samasora, but the point being that in a little bit more than 100 steps, we can all connect back to Moshe Rabbeinu and the Kabbalah Satorah in some way, and it's something we should keep in mind at all times when we make decisions about how we transmit the Torah to our children and to our grandchildren, and how we protect Torah Shebaal Peh and defend the Torah Shebaal Peh to make sure that it makes it on to the next generation.